Intimate Awkward. That is Andy Shepherd, and hopefully this interview won't be either one of those things. Do you think, Andy?
Well, I'm a little bit of both of those things. So I can't help it. It's just the way I am.
Now, Andy, I'm always a little bit nervous doing interviews, and I know you do interviews yourself, so you know how that goes. You get a little. You don't want to screw it up when you got somebody.
Come
else on the
you're
line,
not
right?
nervous, yeah. Give
but,
me a break.
But when I'm interviewing an internationally renowned broadcaster such as yourself, I feel especially silly because I feel like you're just going. You're just a schmuck. What do you know? I'm a CBC guy. I got the big paycheck. And what do you know, college boy?
Well, first of all, yeah, you haven't seen my paycheck. It's not that big.
Believe me, it's bigger than mine. I'm unemployed.
All right. I'll give you that much. But no, there's no reason to feel that way. That's for sure.
But yeah, for folks that don't know, you do a little show there on the CBC once in a while. I understand.
A little show, yeah. I come into work Monday to Friday and do a little show on Radio 2 called After Hours. It's a jazz show, and it's on Monday to Friday from 10 to midnight. You can tell I've said that a few times.
Yes. And it's a fine show. People listen to it around the world, you've told me.
Well, we occasionally get emails from, I think the farthest flung places I've heard from people are Greenland and China and Australia, and we had someone who was listening online from Southeast Asia, and I think the show goes to the Middle East as well. So it's quite neat when we hear from people who are listening on the other side of the world at some ungodly hour.
That's amazing. Well, congratulations on all your success. It's a fine show. Which came first, radio or guitar?
Guitar, definitely. I started playing guitar when I was 16, which is actually kind of late, but I played piano and sax before that, and I got hooked on guitar because I realized that, you know, chicks dug it. No, I heard a couple of musicians when I was younger that I thought were just amazing, and immediately picked up the guitar and started taking lessons, and I studied guitar in university. So
you're classically trained, as they say?
Well, kind of. I studied with a classical musician in Hamilton when I was going to high school there. But when I went to university, I was doing jazz guitar. I'm a terrible jazz guitarist, though, so that's why I'm a jazz broadcaster, not a jazz musician. But I appreciate it. That's for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, for a guy that's obviously into jazz music, you host the jazz show. You're not a very jazzy guitarist. Is that just because you feel you can't play it, or do you prefer to play something else?
Well, I think I listen to jazz and I love jazz and I appreciate jazz and I write music that's not particularly jazz. It just is, I don't know, it's probably my constitution, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm very much interested in world music and simpler harmonies, I think, appeal to me in terms of my compositions. I have such a huge respect for jazz musicians and the way that they think about music and the way that they're able to compose and improvise on the spot. And I'm trying to do more of that, like to improvise in my shows,
right.
In my music shows. But no, I just didn't have the same sort of predisposition that jazz musicians seem to have. You have to have that gene, I think.
Yeah.
Jazz gene.
I'll be honest with you. I don't listen to a lot of jazz music. It's. I appreciate it, but it's not my thing. For the same reason that I don't listen to a lot of instrumental music, and I think that a lot of times in jazz and instrumental music, the performer is very good at the instrument that they are playing, and often they want to show that off. They want to show how good they are, and they want to fit in as many notes as they can. So a lot of times, a lot of that stuff for me comes at the expense of the melody, at the expense of the listening experience. And what I absolutely love about what you do is that, to me, it seems all about a simple melody that I can relate to without being some, you know, super fancy music, you know, technical music nerd. And I can relate to it, I can understand it, I can follow it. And it's just a simple thing, but still, obviously, you're an amazing virtuoso at the same time.
Well, that means a lot to me because, I mean, first of all, I'm flattered, and second of all, it means a lot to know that that that's how you listen to it or that's how you appreciate it, because that's kind of how I want it to be. You know, that it's the music first, that it's the song first, and that the technique is secondary. It's like it's there to allow you to make music, but it's not, you know, the thing in of itself.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. That happens in jazz and classical, and it happens in rock music, and it happens in every style, where the player gets so absorbed in getting better that they forget what drew them to the music in the first place. And those are, you know, good songs and good melodies and music that touches you in some way, whether it makes you want to bang your head or dance or cry or whatever, that's really what it's about.
Yeah.
For me, it's just guitar just happens to be what I play, but it's not the be all and end all, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes the solo becomes the thing that becomes the song instead of the solo being a part of the song or helping the song. It sort of takes away from it a lot of times.
Yeah, exactly. It can get in the way of experiencing the music. You know, I think the great musicians often talk about, you know, channeling music, like it goes through them.
Yeah.
And they're really being expressive. And I think those guys who are just doing technical stuff, you know, it's like they're playing exercises.
Yeah.
Or you could call it something else. But it's the most important thing, I think, is to reach out from your instrument and be able to touch someone in some way.
Yeah. So do you have to tone yourself back sometimes? Are you conscious of those things? Like, oh, I better not get too crazy here. Like,
well,
do you ever just just kind of find yourself wanking off and then go, oh, I can't do that.
Well, I try and mix it up a little bit. I mean, there are some songs that are flashier and kind of show off what the guitar can do or you know, maybe what I can do, but you know, that's there to demonstrate the possibilities. But if you're doing that all the time, you forget the simple stuff.
Yeah.
And it's the simple stuff that people remember. It's the simple tune. You know, people remember Beethoven. They remember ba da da da.
Yeah.
That's you know, two notes really.
Yeah.
And that's what people remember, those simple themes, the things that strike you in your heart. And the technical details are for the musicians to figure out,
right?
And to worry about. And
right.
if the audience is worried about that technical stuff, then it's not as meaningful an experience, I don't think.
Another reason why I don't listen to a lot of instrumental music is that I sometimes can't focus on what's happening because it can be all over the place. But another thing that I love about your music is that even though most of the songs don't have words, somehow they tell me a story or they make me feel a certain way. They kind of put me in a place, and I feel like you created it with that mood or with that story in mind, even though it doesn't have that words to make that.
Well, it's a funny thing, you know, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I mean, I'm so thrilled that that's how that music makes you feel, but I've been thinking about it in terms of radio and in terms of music, that really it's all about pictures.
Yeah,
like the way we listen to music, the way we remember it, it's often how we associate it. Music's so powerful because you remember stuff that you heard in high school because it's associated with, you know, the first time you kissed somebody or the first time you smoked a cigarette or like they're attached to the images in our minds. And you know, when I'm doing my radio show, I'm always thinking about, well, what's the image that is attached to this?
Right.
And it's the same when you hear someone tell a story. A really great story, and this goes back to when, you know, when you were kids and your parents tell you stories, and that they describe all these wonderful details, and those images stay with you, and I'm always sort of searching out those simple images to attach to the music. It just makes the experience better, I think, I hope.
Right. When a I have singer-songwriters on the show all the time. When a singer-songwriter writes a song, they think of a certain event or they think of a certain feeling or emotion or whatever, and then they sort of build a song around that to convey that. Is that the same thing you do when you're writing instrumental music? Is it sort of based on, like, Dragonfly Helicopter, for example? Is that based on you saw the dragonflies and that sort of came through in the music, or...
Yeah, I mean, it's that there's a little riff at the beginning of the piece that kind of was programmatic, like it sounded a little bit like the way that those dragonflies swooped around like little Apache helicopters. And
yeah.
And so I had that image in my head, but the rest of the tune kind of followed out of that starting theme. Like that, this, I find it's, when I was a kid, I played with Lego all the time, and the building blocks, the bricks, are these little motifs that you write, and then you try and develop them.
Yeah.
And everyone does that in any song, any piece of music, whether it's classical or rock or jazz or whatever. You take these tiny little snippets, like the Beethoven's ba-da-da-da, and he just kept repeating that and developing it and expanding it. You take the simplest little idea and play with it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I started off with that little nugget of an idea and kept that image in my mind and then tried to make it a larger piece. And
mm-hmm.
so that, I think that's sometimes, you know, you just sit down and you're noodling around on the guitar and something comes to you all at once, and sometimes it takes a long time. But it always seems to be based around those little riffs or those little noodly ideas.
Yeah. Are you constantly changing things up, or how do you know when a song is done? Like,
it's never done.
Yeah.
This is my third CD, and on each CD it contains some of the last one. Like, there are songs that I never feel like I'm finished, and I'll constantly revisit them and try and make them better. And I'm never satisfied. Which is kind of a problem for me, but it also, I guess, is what keeps you going. You know, I think Mordecai Richler. Somebody asked Mordecai Richler if he'd written the perfect book, and he said, "Well, no. Why would I keep writing?" So, you know, I think that's what you're trying to do with art, is you're trying to capture this feeling, and the feeling is always changing. So,
right.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit about your past CDs and stuff. I feel a bit bad because I'm sort of late to the Andy Shepherd party, I guess. I'm just catching up. I haven't heard the back catalog.
Yeah.
I'm hoping you'll hook me up one of these days.
Absolutely.
So what is different from the previous two CDs? Like, where has your journey sort of taken you?
Well, it's kind of an interesting thing in that my first CD was similar in that it was mostly instrumental guitar music. And then I did an album of kind of world music and pop stuff that I thought it was a good idea at the time, but I never felt really comfortable when it was done. I thought, this isn't really me. Like, I tried to be something that I wasn't, maybe.
Yeah.
And I sort of returned to that, this solo guitar stuff, and it just felt more like me. And what I did in the process was that I incorporated a lot of those world music ideas into the guitar music, and that seems to be the fit. That seems to be where it works for me. So
right. So I mean, obviously, you're still doing a mix of stuff from over your career in your shows. I've certainly heard you do things that came from a while ago and stuff. So
yeah.
So obviously, I mean, you haven't come that far since the beginning. That you're still, obviously, you're still the same guy, but
I mean, but I had a few years where I was playing electric slide guitar.
Oh, really?
In a basically rock pop band.
Wow.
And I was playing a lot of lap steel and that sort of thing. I just kind of come full circle back to this solo steel string stuff.
Yeah.
Just because it seems to fit me or my personality or the way I operate, and I find that I get the best response from it too.
Yeah,
that it just seems to connect with people better. So you know, and the next album, maybe, I don't know, I may be playing kazoo on the next one. Who knows? but for the moment, I'm enjoying being back into this comfort zone.
Yeah, tell me a bit about your influences. You studied with some of the greats. You're been on tour with one of your mentors and your guitar heroes, I guess, for a little while now. Tell me about the guys that you've studied under, the guys that sort of inspired you to do what you do.
Well, the first guy who really captured my imagination was a fellow named Don Ross.
Yeah, who's fantastic.
Yeah, who's an amazing steel string player and really has changed the landscape in Canada. I mean, he's done a lot to influence a lot of players and has done things with the instrument that, you know, are pretty revolutionary. And I was in university, and I was, you know, hacking my way through jazz guitar, and I said to my jazz guitar teacher, "Have you heard this guy, Don Ross?" And my teacher said, "Oh, yeah, I know Don. He played at my wedding." And I said, oh, can you get me his number? And that's how it started.
Wow.
And I studied with Don for a while in Toronto. And that was really hugely important, and we became good friends. And then later on, I studied with a fellow in France named Pierre Bensouzon, who's an internationally renowned steel string player and kind of probably one of the best in the world these days. And I did a little tour with him this week, opened for him in a couple of shows, which was terrifying but a huge honor.
Well, I've been reading the reviews of his shows, and everybody just leaves spellbound. So
yeah, he's a magician, and he's one of these guys. I mean, there's the danger for him, like he can sometimes get so technical that audiences can't follow, but
right.
When he's in his zone, he's so perfectly comfortable with the instrument and so knowledgeable of so many different styles of music that he can just sit and improvise and blow people away.
Right.
And I should tell you, the way that I studied with him is he lives about 90 kilometers northeast of Paris, and he has a beautiful home in the countryside, and he's converted the main floor into a studio, and he's got two or three little living quarters. And students go and they live at his house. And so me and a couple of other students lived there for about 2.5 weeks. And we just ate and breathed and slept guitar. And there was no television and no internet and no telephone, just baguettes and cheese and wine and guitar. And it was just about the best thing ever.
Kind of like going to a guitar summer camp, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. I want to go back.
Yeah. All right, well, you've certainly played at the West End before, but I guess this is your first big headlining show. So do you pull out the pyro and the lights and the dancing girls for this show?
Bring your sunglasses.
The spectacle?
It's going to be brilliant, bright, and loud, and your earplugs, too. Yeah, we're going to break all the fire codes. I'm really looking forward to it. I have played the West End. Last year we did the Tsunami show, which was wonderful event, and I've done the Guitar Festival of the Guitar there,
mm-hmm.
and it's a great place to play, and my favorite music venue in Winnipeg, and they've been really supportive of me there, and I'm just looking for, it's just such a great vibe, and I'm looking forward to having people out. It's kind of going to be a party, you know. We're celebrating the release of the CD, and Sheena Grove is opening up. She's just been selected for the Winnipeg Folk Festival this year.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and so I think it's just going to be a fun night. I think I'm really looking forward to it, yeah.
And you're not from Winnipeg, but you live here now to do your little radio show, right?
Yeah.
And so
I live in Wolseley. I live in the same house that a couple of the band members from Nathan lived in before me, and Bartley Kivas lived in the same house. So it seems to be, and I think a couple of the Whalen Jennies as well. It just seems to be some kind of music vortex.
Something in the water there.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, I want to go out with the one song that I hear most people talking about, and perhaps you too, is one of the very few that you do with vocals on the record, is Until the Next Time. And this song, it grabs me by the heart every single time, and I know it does for everybody else as well. First of all, tell us a bit about the story, and then is it hard doing this song all the time?
Well, the story behind it is a dear friend of mine in university. We met at a little coffee house in Montreal called the Yellow Door, which is basically somebody's basement, but it's the longest running coffee house in North America, apparently. And Joni Mitchell played there, and Bruce Coburn, and that sort of thing. Anyway, we met there and became fast friends and played guitar together all the time and stayed in touch after we both finished university, and he actually went on to become a guitar builder. He's an American. It was an American fellow, and we'd visit each other north and south of the border, and hang out lots, and we'd go skiing together, and just a great, great close friend. But he had a troubled past. His mother committed suicide when he was young, and clearly, it was in his constitution, in his makeup, that he had a difficult time with things, and he killed himself a couple of years ago. And I actually wrote the song before he did that. So it was a tribute to him while I still knew him, which was nice. And it was inspired by the music of Appalachia, like the mountains in that area, and the guitar is tuned like a dulcimer. And it was kind of conceived as this folk music song in tribute to this amazing guy that I got to know.
Yeah.
But it's hard to see. You know, every time I sing the tune, I remember the short time that we spent together, and what a great friendship we had, and how lucky I was to get to know him in his short life. So it's difficult, but I'm happy that it's a remembrance that people they feel like maybe they got to know him a little bit by hearing.
Absolutely,
the song.
It tells a great story, and I don't know, it just feels, it's a touching tribute. It is to me kind of sad, but at the same time, obviously this guy had an amazing life. During his stay here, so.
Oh, he was getting in so much trouble. The guy, this is a guy who used to snowboard, and every time I met him, he had broken some other limb. Like I'd meet up with him, and his arm was broken from snowboarding. And I met up with him another time, and he severed a nerve diving out of a tree. And he was reckless and great fun. And we drank far too much scotch together.
And it sounds like none of those things really. Like, he kept going and kept doing his thing, and then it's too bad that he's not here anymore, but it's good of you to pay tribute to him and keep the memory alive in such a great song that touches so many people. So congratulations for it. We're going to play it, and thank you very much for being on the show, Andy. It's a real pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Jeff. It's an honor to be on your show.
Definitely looking forward to the show on Thursday night.
Oh, I hope to see you there. May the 4th be with you. That's how you remember the date.
Absolutely.
Beautiful.
Thanks, Andy.
This friend of mine thought he could fly. Nothing between him and the ground, just 25 feet of sky. But a whiskey bottle foiled his plans. With the full force of the law he lands, and it's 2 years in recuperation. Until next time, there he goes again. Life weighs heavy, but you can't keep a good man down. Until next time, there he goes again. Life weighs heavy, but you can't keep a good man down. Until next time. This friend of mine gave me his guitar and a case of beer in case I fell too hard. He said, I'm just a quiet man who is in my frying pan. It took me 3 days to figure out what he meant. Until next time, there he goes again. Life weighs heavy, but you can't keep a good man down. Until next time, there he goes again. Life weighs heavy, but you can't keep a good man down. Until next time. Thank you. of North Carolina. With a heavy heart, he sets out for the West. And who knows what he's gonna find? Maybe more than peace of mind. And it's 6 months since I've heard a word. Until next time, there he goes again. Life weighs heavy, but you can't keep a good man down. Until next time, there he goes again. Life weighs heavy, but you can't keep a good man down. Until next time.
There, we're Nathan, and you're listening to
Tell the Band to Go Home on 101.5 UMFM on your radio dials.
Sugar.
Yeah, our good friend's Nathan there, and that was I left my station from Jimson Weed, and we heard Carrie singing along with Mr. Shepherd before that on his song. Until next time, and I should have asked, but I'm just going to say right now, special guest this Thursday, West End Culture. I would think Carrie would be there. So if she's not already planning to, I'm going to invite her right now. She sometimes listens to the show. So Carrie, I want to see you down there Thursday night at the Andy Shepherd CD release party, so you can sing along with Mr. Shepherd. All right? You're not doing anything, are you? Good. It's a date. Check out Nathan. They're playing at the High and Lonesome Club on Saturday the 6th there. Yeah, right. Saturday the 6th at the High and Lonesome Club. Always a good time when they play down there. And apparently might be one of your last chances to see Nathan for a while. Carrie went and got herself all knocked up. And you know what? I'm a brave guy. I'm a brave guy. Here, I'll show you how brave I am. Oh, nobody there. I thought maybe that was Carrie on the phone. Guess not. No, I screwed it up. Anyways, Saturday, High and Lonesome Club, Nathan. She went and got knocked up, so you won't see Carrie and Nathan for a while. Apparently, they're gonna. Although maybe she'll be like Shelley and go start doing shows 2 days after the baby's born. You never know. Anyways, I got to take a quick break, and we'll come back. We'll tell you about a big event coming up next weekend in Winnipeg. Be right back after a couple of these.